Oh, yeah, just I didn't actually introduce myself earlier on. I'm Matt Coombs. I co-lead here with Matt Hebditch. Matt's on holiday this week. Good news for him. And yeah, it's just great to see you here this morning, to be able to share together, to see the kids in. I love the summer when we actually get to all be in together for some time. So it's fantastic. I'm going to kick off with a few questions for you, really deep, difficult questions, okay? So could I have my first slide up, please, Steve? Okay, kids, you can help with this question as well. Okay, here's four superheroes for you. Can you tell me what their weaknesses are? What is the one weakness? I've given you the easy one first, okay? Kryptonite. Superman is weak against kryptonite, isn't he? Okay. How about She-Hulk? She-Hulk. Family photo, this one. She-Hulk. Anyone know what She-Hulk's weakness is? Harris? Not having the green stuff. No, it's not that one. And it's not Brussels sprouts, Mark. Nobody sure? Any other guesses? Actually, She-Hulk, her weakness is actually her anger. Whereas the Hulk, Mr. Hulk, when he gets angry, he gets stronger. Actually, She-Hulk, when she gets angry, she goes a bit out of control and actually she becomes a bit careless and sloppy. Okay, does anyone know who the next one is? Shazam, correct. Shazam, come on, this is quite an easy one. What is Shazam's weakness? Anyone apart from Karis to start with? Karis, what's your answer? Correct. When he says his name, he goes weak again. He loses his power. Finally, Black Widow. Anyone know what Black Widow's weakness is? Spiders, not spiders. Good guess. Cream cakes? Looks like possibly no. I don't think that's it. Anyone know spiders? Her weakness, Black Widow. Her weakness is actually brainwashing because during her time as a spy, apparently, in the Red Room, they mentally programmed her with certain mental commands. I take this all off Google, which can bring her under control. It must be true. It must be true. Actually, this can be used against her. She could be controlled should she ever turn rogue, apparently. So she does have a weakness. All right, that's it, kids. You can crack on with your crafts now. 15 minutes, all right. I'm going to ask us one key question today, and I want us to give this some proper thought. What would you say is your one weakness that the enemy would hold up and tell you that God can't work through you? What would be the one thing the enemy would push to you and say, God cannot use you. God cannot work through you. Just say that back to me, okay? What is the one weakness that the enemy would hold up and say, God can't work through you? Cool. Let's stick with that question in our minds. As we've looked through the letters to the Corinthians, it's been great getting our hands around the challenges that Paul faced. I love it with this brilliant, messy, faithful, questioning, sinning, doubting, loving, slightly broken, mainly healed church in Corinth. It was so close to his heart. He planted this church. Apollos, others had watered it, but God was growing the church. Now, obviously, none of this stuff that we've looked at applies to us at Welton, does it? Okay, because we're perfect, yeah? Not. I just think, isn't it so reassuring that it's normal not to have everything polished? God isn't looking for a polished church. We share it at welcome meals. We say we are not the perfect church. We will get stuff wrong, and we're aware of that, and it's fine. Today's reading from 2 Corinthians chapter 12 opens with the words, "I must go on boasting." Now, I thought that was a slightly strange place to start. Ian's looking at what? I must go on boasting. So I'm going to give just a little bit of backstory. Otherwise, this could all sound a little bit peculiar. Paul really opens his heart to us if we read through this whole letter he has sent. It's the kind of closest we get to Paul in all of his writings. We get to see his deep, deep, unwavering love for Jesus, his love for the church. We see how he has been hurt, his pain, and his joy. The church in Corinth had ignored Paul's advice and warnings, and we see in chapter 2, he mentions having had to make a painful visit to see them, and also a follow-up letter that he sent, which he says he wrote and this is in chapter 2, he wrote out of great distress and anguish of heart and with many tears, not to grieve you, but to let you know the depth of my love for you. This is so real, isn't it? It's so close to the heart for Paul. But what had gone wrong? What had gone wrong with this church that they chose to ignore Paul? In chapter 11, we see a little Paul's CV, like a quick summary in verses 26-20 at the end of his CV, and it says, I'm in danger from Jews, in danger from bandits, in danger from fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in city, in danger in country, in danger in sea, and in danger from false believers. Who is weak, and I do not feel weak? Who is led into sin, and I do not burn inwardly? It's not a fantastic CV, is it? Paul is poor, constantly in danger. He's open about being weak and sinful. And he's regarded by some people as an unimpressive speaker. From a human perspective, I don't think he's a kind of hugely attractive proposition to lead a church, to kind of lead you. It's not the kind of thing we'd first think, yeah, I love that thought of being in danger constantly, being poor, being weak, being drawn to sin. Hopefully we can be honest enough to agree that it's not surprising when some, as Paul sarcastically describes them, super apostles showed up. It was easy for the Corinthian church to lose faith in Paul. These super apostles were actually gifted speakers, and they appeared to be preaching their own more attractive version of Christianity. And this church in Corinth, which Paul is so attached to and passionate about, loses its way and starts pulling on this more attractive version of faith. So the good news is that through 2 Corinthians, we see Paul's joy at their recognition. Joy that this church realized their mistakes and wanted to put their things right that they'd got wrong. It's an incredible feeling, isn't it, when you have reconciliation with someone. I imagine most of us at some point in our lives have been really hurt, properly hurt, and actually not always reconciled. But sometimes that moment of reconciliation when someone comes back to you and you work through things and put things right and there's an apology, it's such an incredible feeling, isn't it? And Paul must have felt this so much about this church. It's not everyone who came back, though. Not everybody was convinced by Paul still. And so he still has a bit of work to do, trying to convince those who don't recognize him, don't recognize him as a leader. And so where we are with our reading today, we're picking up Paul's defense of his ministry partway through. And that's where it says, I must go on boasting. Okay, let's read 2 Corinthians 12, 1 to 10. I must go on boasting. Although there is nothing to be gained, I will go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell. I will boast about a man like that, but I will not boast about myself, except about my weaknesses. Even if I should choose to boast, I would not be a fool, because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain, so no one will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or say, or because of these surpassingly great revelations. Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is perfected in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. It struck me as I was reading that Paul's approach could sound a little bit like false humility. But let's have that backstory in mind of what's gone on. Having to justify himself is complete agony for Paul. I kind of love this kind of love-hate thing with what he's doing, the fact that he hates having to justify himself. If we look further back, he keeps actually apologizing. If we look back chapters before, he really does not enjoy boasting about himself when all he really wants to do is boast about Jesus. But this is what he has to do. This isn't Paul's kind of Oscar moment where he looks shocked and kind of pretends to cry and gives a 10-minute speech. He really, really has been crying, literally crying over this church and the pain that they could be turned into anything other than the true gospel of Jesus. When Paul says, "I knew a man," he's actually referring to himself. Hopefully you picked up on that. And he's not doing that to be pretentious like they might at the Oscars, but because he feels unworthy to be the person caught up in the experience of God that he describes. Okay, just going to ask you, turn to someone next to you and talk about yourself in the third person. Tell them one thing about yourself which maybe you love doing. So for example, mine would be, Matt Coombs was so happy that Lionesses won yesterday. Okay? Just turn to someone next to you. Try and do it. See how difficult or easy it is for you. Quick, in the third person. All right, how did you get on? Was that like agony? Or did it come easily to some people? It's so strange, isn't it? Talking in the third person. I hope I never do it. But it becomes quite popular, doesn't it? And Paul, he was just talking about himself. That was what he was doing when he talked about this man who had this incredible vision, this incredible experience of God. There's a couple of things in this passage, right? Okay, I think we can hopefully agree we don't fully understand, okay? So I don't want to kind of spend ages on them. The first, even Paul suggests we don't dwell on, as he describes his heavenly experience as things that are not able to be told, that no mortal is permitted to speak. But that doesn't seem to stop lots of people from talking about it and trying to figure out what was going on. I think the most helpful thing that I've read, come across, is that while this is something which is a bit lost on us, actually the Corinthians, the people receiving this letter, they would have got it. They would have got what Paul was talking about when he was talking about this vision of heaven. I can kind of imagine that if they could hear me saying in Corinth that when I eat Joe Coombs' lasagna, it puts me in heaven, they would have no idea what I'm talking about, would they? But you guys, you know what I mean. Yeah, when I say I'm in heaven, yeah? And so this, when they're talking about, when Paul's talking about this experience, I think the church in Corinth would have understood it. For us, there's something a little bit lost. This was a moment deeply personal to Paul, clearly difficult for him to express. The word paradise that's used comes from a Persian word, and I love this. This word means a walled garden. And when a Persian king wanted to honor someone specially dear to him, he made them a companion of the garden and gave them the right to walk in the royal gardens with him in close and intimate companionship. That kind of reminded me a little bit of God walking in the garden with Adam and Eve, sort of just that intimacy. And imagine Paul's experience being, yeah, I walked with God in this experience. He was so close to me. The other thing we don't fully understand is what Paul's thorn in his flesh was. If anyone's got the answer, grab me afterwards and tell me, because I can't figure out. We can look at a few ideas, but what I'd love us to have in the forefront of our minds is that whatever it was, this thorn in his flesh was real. It was tangible. It was nagging. It's not just a kind of pinprick in your finger or something. It is something which was life-changing for Paul. So there's a couple of main schools of thought. One, that the thorn was a physical ailment, and the other, that it was a spiritual, more spiritual in character. And there's kind of good arguments for both. We're not going to spend ages, but just to give you a few ideas. Physically, thoughts are whether he may have had epilepsy or agonizing headaches, possibly brought on by problems with his eyes. And there's that line in Galatians where he says, "See what large letters I write with." It's clear Paul did have a problem with his eyes, and it could have been the thing that caused headaches. Another favorite theory is that it could have been a fever, a malarial fever, found in the coastal areas at the time. And one of the commentaries says the accompanying headaches have been described as being like a red hot bar thrust through the forehead. That's a bit too graphic, isn't it? I'm not sure about that. But a serious pain. So the other theory, that the thorn was more spiritual in character, suggests the thorn was there to kind of just prick the bubble of Paul's arrogance, traces of which probably lingered on from his religious upbringing, even after he began following Jesus. Paul faced constant opposition, and some commentators personalized the messenger of Satan, pointing to people that Paul refers to. There's Alexander, the metal worker, who Paul said did him a great deal of harm. There's also some people, and Paul describes them as, gangrene is a great word, isn't it? He also refers to some whose teachings will spread like gangrene, who have departed from the truth. They destroy the faith of some. These are just some of the challenges that Paul faced. You can read the book of Acts, read his letters, and you see the suffering that Paul went through. The word translated as torment literally means to strike with a fist, to maltreat in such a way that the shame and indignation are felt by the sufferer. So while we don't fully understand what it was that caused Paul so much pain, what this thorn was, we can be assured that the pain he felt was very real. Get this. This is Paul, who, through Jesus, brought a young man back to life. Paul, who healed loads of people. In fact, the whole island, he healed one person and everyone on the island came to Paul for healing. This is Paul, who miraculously escaped from a prison. Yep, this is Paul, praying repeatedly for relief, but living with a long-term real pain, yet continuing to love Jesus and serve him. You might not think that of Paul at first, would you? All those things that God does for him. Why this pain? So what does this say to us today about our thorn in the flesh? What would you say is your one weakness the enemy would hold up and say, God can't work through you? One commentator says, Paul prayed that it would be taken away from him. But God answered his prayer, as he often does. He did not take the thing away, but he gave Paul strength to bear it. God does not spare us things. He makes us able to conquer them and to go and to come through them. I would definitely want to add a God does not always spare us things. It is my commentary. But otherwise, I love this. It's honest, isn't it? We do not stop trusting our God. It's lovely. Just yesterday, somebody in our house group talking about a scan they've had and it coming back clear. And I was thinking of some of the pain of that, some of the things, they've been going through carrying that, but God walks through it with them, and it's just some good news there. And I think I could look around this room this morning, and that most of you I know very well, some of you I know a little bit, but I could look at most of you and think of a time where you've walked through something very painful over the years. But actually, you've walked through it, and God has walked with you. Yeah. I was thinking as well, some of us are still going through those things, aren't we? We're still in those painful moments at the moment. But we're loving God and we're serving God. We don't want it to stop us. Paul was living with this thorn in his side, but shares with us this most beautiful paradox in verses 9 and 10. God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. I love this image from the Bible Project. The paradox of the cross and the challenge it brings to our values. God values humility and weakness because his love and power are made known through the death and resurrection of Jesus. Jesus' cruciform way of life becomes our own. Paul's life and leadership mirrored that of Jesus. Weakness, we don't always think as the greatest thing we could have, isn't it? But Paul says, I'm going to boast in my weaknesses. All right, I appreciate this is going to be a bit of a challenge. And the kids, you've been fantastic at the back, doing really well. But I want us to come back to that question again this morning. What would you say is your one weakness that the enemy would hold up and say, God can't work through you? And then could be illness, could be circumstance, could be a mental health issue, could be something to do with well-being, could be family issues. What would stop you from God really working through you? Whatever that might be. It could be inviting a neighbor around for a coffee, sharing a bit about Jesus, bringing the hope of Jesus into the workplace, serving in a church, kids, youth work, some of the less seen stuff, putting out chairs, set up. Whatever it is, wherever it is that actually you sometimes get that glimpse, I would like to serve in that way. But the enemy holds them up to you and says, you're too weak. You can't do it because of this. What would be that thing today for you? Just encourage you. Don't downplay it. Don't anybody think, oh, I've got loads of weaknesses. I think there'd be something for each of us where the enemy speaks to us and says, you can't do it because of this thing.
Thanks, Matt, for sharing that message. Paul overcame so much, didn't he? He was a really interesting character. You know, he had quite a colourful history, and yet he had weaknesses, and yet Jesus, God, used him so much.